Welcome to Marketing Made Clear. I'm your host, Will Green. And today's episode is a bonus episode, which covers my recording with the legendary Yaz Porritt from Yorkshire Pooches Therapies. And with the bonus episode comes a bonus theme song. Yaz says she loves metal, and so do I. So I've gone heavy for this one. No apologies. The episode will be structured with an intro, the recording itself, and then a bit of a reflection from me at the end, where I can relate some of the conversation to other things that might be of interest. Are you ready?
Marketing made clear. We're here to educate from beginners to pros. We'll elevate, bringing the insights like a blazing spark. Together we'll conquer, leaving a mark.
So Yaz is a canine massage therapist and an applied herbal choices consultant. Yaz holds a first-class BA honours degree and postgraduate diploma in performance practice, and is currently studying towards her second degree, which is a BSc honours in natural sciences, specialising in biology. Yaz is known in the dog industry as the Queen of Pain, but that's because of her specialism in pain management, but also all aspects of natural canine health as well. Yaz is also a Fotizo ambassador and author of Your Dog's Pain Diary, a blueprint for monitoring a pain trial. Yaz is from Yorkshire, a place up in the north of England, but works internationally with various pet parents to help with pain management. But Yaz is also a guest lecturer, a thought leader, raw food consultant, and content creator. And for me, Yaz is one of the leaders in content creation within the pet sector. The Yorkshire Pooches Therapies TikTok account is a fantastic mix of seriousness and silliness, with thousands of followers, tens of thousands of views, and a massively engaged following, as well as being active on Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. Yaz worked as a content creator for My Pet Nutritionist and is also the founder of Instinctive Animal Wellness. She's the resident canine therapist at Steph's Pet Pantry, and it's with Steph that Yaz collaborates on Utter Tripe, a raw dog food focused blog, which is super entertaining. So without further ado, here's Yaz.
Prepare for Yaz.
Oh, that was really lovely. Thank you. I can never take myself too seriously. And then when you kind of like list all the different jobs that I do in this industry, I'm like, oh, actually, crikey, I do a fair bit.
So how the devil are you?
I am good, busy bee, as always. Got about 20 million different projects going on at the moment. As you well know, that's what I do. But yeah, good. How's things with you?
Yeah. Again, a million projects. I think there's a ton of stuff going on Paleo Ridge-wise. Mm-hmm. The marketing side, there's loads. Writing episodes, recording episodes, editing episodes.
Editing.
It's like...
Yeah. No, I feel you on that one.
I've tried a couple of things, actually. I don't know if you've used any of these, but I tried... Have you ever used Riverside?
No.
It's like an online thing where you upload your video or your like audio or anything. And it uses AI to pick out bits to remove, basically, and help you edit it and stuff. You can actually edit the video by selecting text and deleting it and stuff. So if you want to take bits out.
Oh, okay. I use an app similar to that called Captions on my phone. So when I'm making content, because I've just changed my content that I'm doing at the moment for Arthritis Awareness Month, you record in the app, or you can record out of it, and AI puts the captions on. But it's like these automatic zoom in, zoom out, and it's really choppy, and it's like a feast for the senses when... And it's all AI, because usually I'm like, ich about AI, but it really does help. It can't write, though. It can't write for Toffee. It's really the writing aspect of it.
But you have to correct it, don't you?
Yeah. And it always calls me Yorkshire Peaches Therapy. I'm like, it's Pooches. Yorkshire Pooches Therapy.
Maybe you should just, like, launch that in case, you know, so you can capture
Yorkshire Peaches.
they do want peaches for therapy or something.
Yeah. Maybe. Who knows? I mean, there's a niche for everything, so I could
absolutely
do that. But yeah, AI is a funny one, isn't it? Because especially when I was writing my first book, it was someone mentioned like, "Oh, you're going to get AI to help you." I was like, "Absolutely not!" It's all the information's up here. It's and there's like a certain everyone has their own style to writing, but also everyone has their own style to marketing, which is what we've discussed a lot of. And I love the. Yeah. That my brand is a mixture of seriousness and silliness, and that's exactly what I want. Yeah. I want to engage people through laughter, but then I'm just going to be like, oh, by the way, boop, there's a little serious note for you to think about. It just makes it a little bit more digestible for people, especially with the specialism that I'm in, with pain. It's not a topic people want to talk about. It's a motive. So you have to work out how to engage people, because if I go in and go, your dog's in pain and you're not doing X, Y, and Z, all that's going to happen is just a wall is built in front of me and people go, la, 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 don't want to hear, don't want to know. And I think sometimes that's where vets can struggle because, and this isn't me vet bashing, oh, we need our vets, but they struggle a little bit with the patter. Do you know what I mean by patter? I don't know if that's a Yorkshire thing or not, but like...
Is it like bedside manner?
Yeah, like bedside manner, a little bit of patter, just being human. We're all human. We're all trying to muddle our way through this world, and just making yourself human and approachable, I've found, has been excellent for my customer retention as well. Like a lot of them I would class as pals because we just get on so well, because the energy you put out through your marketing, through your social media stuff, you will attract like-minded folk back in.
Yeah. It's actually a really interesting thing, and it jumps ahead to what some questions I had. So let's just jump there. No, it's good. I think, so I spoke to Anna Webb as well. She's quite well known for being quite entertaining, I think.
Yes.
And it's that balance as well, because she's brought on to programs for her expertise, but she also brings like that element of entertainment.
Yes.
And one thing I asked her about is that, you know, for me, you kind of have, we all have our reputations in a certain way, our professional reputations, let's say. And sometimes when you kind of are creating content, you can feel like you're taking a bit of a leap of faith there to make it yourself look a bit
daft,
silly.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite tough. But how do you think you get the right balance?
Oh, okay. So I think for me, anyone who's met me knows that I do not take myself very seriously. However, when I talk about what I'm passionate about, which is pain and species appropriate nutrition, it's like a flip of a switch. I want to speak with conviction. I want to provoke thought in people about the topics that I'm interested in. But then I want people to know that I'm not, you know, on this pedestal, that they can come and ask me questions. You know, you can come and say hello. Like, I'm just human. And it's like, it is that fine balance. I don't know how I find the balance. To be honest, it depends what mood I'm in when I switch the camera on, because sometimes I'll go, right, okay, I haven't really got any plans on what I'm going to do with my socials today. Let's just go through, scroll through TikTok, find some audios. Haha, that's funny. I'm going to use that.
Yeah.
It's usually when something's really knacked me that I'll do my serious, we need to talk about this. And it can catch people off guard a little bit sometimes, but that's my brand. I suppose that's my brand. Like, I like to catch people off guard, to keep them engaged, keep them on the toes. I don't like to be too predictable with my content. Because if it gets predictable, I think it gets boring. Maybe that's just me and my neurodivergent brain. I like things spicy.
yeah, definitely. And I think one of the some of the videos that I saw, I've seen over the last few years, I think. Is your reaction videos, when you react to other videos.
Oh, my days. People go wappy for them, don't they?
I think they're popular.
They are very, very popular, especially the therapist reacts and stitching coming. So it's a video of, I'm just thinking of the most recent one, of a dog that's collapsed on a walk. And if I started essentially taking the mick out of that owner, that would be pretty insensitive to do. You know, this dog was clearly at end of life and this owner just was not wanting to let them go. So I then stitched it and talked about the seriousness of that situation, because I find with social media is, and especially with dogs, we have to advocate for them. And I find that on social media, there'll be either a dog that's stressed or a dog that's ill, and you put a funny audio on it and then people are like, oh, that's hilarious. And there was one I saw of a golden retriever, and it had such a huge sway in its pelvis. Like, it was, obviously, I can't diagnose, but I was like, I'd put a year's wage on it. That dog's got hip dysplasia. Put a funny audio on it, and people love it. I'm like, guys, we need to just come back to reality a little bit. Like, especially with using animals in social media or using animals as marketing, if I see an animal that I believe is distressed or has exaggerated features, I will say something about it, because who else is going to say anything about it? I'm not actually invested on how much money you've put into promoting that product with that particular animal. And what I'm invested in is the welfare of that animal. So I suppose I'm very Marmite. People either love me or they hate me, but you always know that I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And I think that resonates with people.
But I think there are a lot of keyboard warriors out there.
Yes.
I noticed that you are quite careful with how you say things. So you're saying, when you're looking at a video like that, you're saying, look, I can't diagnose this just from watching this video, but it appears to me that this is the issue. And if that is the issue, then, you know, maybe, yeah, that owner needs some help of letting go, because is it fair on the dog? And
Yeah, it comes back to, if I go, what on earth are you doing, you absolute moron, what's going to happen? Bang, they shut down. Yeah. However, with the way that I worded it, I mean, that took me a couple of attempts, did that video. Usually the serious ones take me a lot longer, because I have to go, right, that was mean. Right, let's try again. Let's do it again. Because I don't know if it's because I'm from Yorkshire, but I just say things how it is. And I have to dial it back. I've got to dial it back, because I don't want to alienate people. I want them to be engaged and I want them to feel supported. And it's just about gently encouraging them to have a look at the choices they're making with their animal. But it's a tricky one. I see a lot of painful dogs. That's literally, my clinic is just full of dogs that are in pain, and we're managing their pain. And if an owner goes, oh, well, I've done X, Y, and Z. If I went, why the hell did you do that? It's a safe space. They can say whatever they need to in that room. And I always say, I'm here to provide a buffet of options. You choose what's right. It's not my dog. It's your dog.
Yeah.
Here are your options. You choose. It's just little things I've picked up over the years, just of how to talk to people.
Yeah. And I think that most people, well, if not all, everybody is always trying to do, well, no, let's say most people trying to do the best for their dog. And it comes from that place of they're doing what they think's right, but, you know, they just don't know any better sometimes.
Like, 100%. They'll see all the, I don't know, like, say they put a video up and it goes viral and they're getting loads of likes. And it's like, oh, I love my dog so much when they're wearing that silly outfit. Look at all these thousands of people that love my dog too. Whereas I'm like, okay, shall we? I call it being the fun police. I can take the fun out of any situation with a dog. Like, there's one thing that's come up. I can't quite remember what it was. It was up north, well, north from you anyway. But it was a doggy disco.
Oh, okay.
So it was a nightclub. Yeah, exactly. So it was a nightclub where you go drink cocktails and the dogs have a disco. And I was like, if that's not one of the most ridiculous, stressful, light-chasing, aggression-inducing events, I don't know what is. But people go to that and be like, oh, my God, I get to go to a disco with my dog, drink cocktails with mates, and they all get to play. And sadly, it's not like that. We fall into this trap of, I always get this word wrong, anthropomorphization.
Yes, yes.
Do you know what word I'm on about? Yeah. It's a big word.
So anthropomorphization. Yeah, I know the one.
Yeah, that one. You know that one. Basically, where we put human
projecting
feelings, we project it onto our animal.
Yep.
In some instances, we are the complete opposite and go, that doesn't hurt the dog because it wouldn't hurt me. And it's like, wrong.
Yeah.
But then it goes to the other end of the scale where it's like, oh my days, a doggy disco. Yeah, that looks, I saw a bouncy castle party for a dog. And I was like, that doesn't scream soft tissue injury. I don't know what is. Like, but the people who are setting that up, they're like, oh my, this is going to be so much fun. The dog's going to have so much fun. But people don't understand that the difference between a dog having fun and a dog that's incredibly stressed. You know, when dogs are quotation marks smiling, I'm like, that dog is so stressed.
So actually, this is a really interesting and unscheduled kind of how people extend, you know, see the dogs as an extension of themselves. So this has got really good kind of ramifications and really bad ones too.
Yeah.
So when we say, let's just say humanized dogs.
Yeah.
Anthropomorph or whatever.
Anthropomorphic.
Anthrax.
You'll have to put it in. So
basically, you know, we have our own ideal self, and we have our own ideals that we can then project onto our family. And so when we buy, it comes back to consumer behavior. When we then buy things, we're buying things with our for our dogs as if we're buying them for ourselves, as an extension for us. So the reason I say this has been a good thing and a bad thing is it's been a good thing because when we've had lots of moves for health against feeding ultra processed foods and moving to a healthy diet, that came in humans before it came in dogs.
Yes.
And that's followed. And one of the big reasons that's kind of followed is because of this. You know, you are what you eat, the five a day kind of things that we heard for humans. We're like, maybe we should be thinking about this for dogs as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then as you get on, as you progress with that, you know, then we think, oh, I like doing this, so my dog needs to do this, or otherwise my dog's missing out on this. But you know, your dog's social kind of goals are a little bit different to your own, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that dogs have, very much like people, we all have different social batteries, and dogs have different social batteries. And like, for example, Lily, who you've met, she comes to Cuffs with me every year. She loves it. She's a little princess. She's like, oh, absolutely adore this. My other dogs, Rodney and Peggy, will never come to Crufts because as much as there's like part of me that feels that guilt that Lily gets all the attention, and sometimes people only think I've got Lily because I don't take Rodney and Peggy to those situations, but that's for their benefit. If I was to bring them into that situation, that'd just be for me. That wouldn't be for them. So you have to check yourself sometimes. And like, for example, Rodney's here with me now. He's here in the office and he just sleeps. That's all he does here. He's a complex little dog with some big feelings, but he comes here, he doesn't alert back, and he just literally just sleeps solid.
Yeah.
That's what he loves. He self-selects his walks as well. So sometimes I'll get harness out and he goes, not today, but I'm like, okay, cool, pal. But like, what I have to sometimes hammer into my customers is that daily walking is a cultural thing in this country, in the UK. It's a cultural thing. And it's like, you're not a good dog owner unless you take your dog out every single day and pound that pavement. That's not the case. If you've got a dog that's painful, a dog that's old, a dog that's reactive, if you take them out and every single day they're reacting, that cortisol level, so the stress chemical spikes, never comes back down to base again. So it's like, why am I doing this? And I used to do the exact same thing. Before I started learning more about the natural health side of things, I'd take my dog out, I'd take Peggy out every day and she'd react every day. And I'm like, who is this benefiting? Who am I answering to in this moment?
Yeah.
And it's, whether it's social media or whatever, because it's a fickle beast, is social media. But it's, I don't even know where I was going with that point. Basically, we can allow social constructs to influence how we care for our dogs too.
Yeah, it's almost like
in front of you.
It's almost like mowing your front lawn. It's conspicuous, isn't it? So, you know, it's to be shown, oh, look, they're walking their dog. They walk their dog all the time. That's what, but they don't walk their dog every day. That's why they've got a bad dog.
Yeah.
But anyway.
I like the grass cutting analogy. It's like the social media. I always remind people, as much as I do things on social media and I'm a bit batty on social media, if you actually meet me in person, I'm not like that all the time. I'm a bit of a miserable sod, to be honest, but like with a very dry sense of humour. So don't take it. I imagine it's the same with parents and newborn babies and stuff. And if you're not making organic porridge for your baby or something, I don't know, and you're not breastfeeding under a full moon and all things like that, then you're a terrible parent. It's like these ridiculous pretenses that we put on people. So I suppose with my content, I try to remove myself.
But I know that a lot of these kind of issues, these social issues, like you've talked about some there, but probably the biggest example of this would be for teenagers on social media. And whenever you speak to anybody that has a teenage daughter or son, or they're having, that's where they're saying, oh well, you know, they go to school, they get home, and then social media takes over. Whereas when you know, I'm making assumptions, but when we were both kind of sort of school age, you'd come home and that was it. That was school done. The social thing was done.
Did you used to do MSN?
Yeah.
MSN, but it wasn't like the pictures. I don't remember. There was. Do you remember Bebo?
Yeah, that was a bit later, but yeah.
Bebo was just starting kind of back end of secondary school. But even then, I wasn't really into it. I was kind of just wanting to chill. I wasn't even like attached to my phone. And I think now kids are just glued to their phone. And it's not their fault. It's just the way that society is. And I think me and my husband often talk about this. And you know how these like really embarrassing, cringeworthy videos like pop up and it's like... I said to my husband, I was like, if I was a teenager now, all these cringy, embarrassing videos would be on the internet forever. You know, like that, I'm going to sing Cher Lloyd by Cher Lloyd.
Yeah, exactly.
You're like, oh, my days, that's going to be there forever.
I know.
Been that person. It's a tough time to be a teenager. There's a lot of expectations. It's not just a case of, I'm going to throw you a curveball here, right? Okay, so member of my family, young girl, she told her mum that she identified as, I can't remember the word, but she identified as a wolf, and she's 11. And I said, the thing is, though, I was like, I used to pretend to be a dog at school. Like, that was like... Kids can't just be kids. It's now they have to have a label attached to them and they identify as that now. And I was like, well, you know, just allow her to feel that and speak that. But I think that social media has had a big influence on that. Like, I used to pretend to be a dog when I was a kid, like, and then lo and behold, I ended up working with dogs. But I didn't identify as a dog. I was just a kid that really, 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 really liked dogs. So you know what I mean? It's all gone a bit crazy, hasn't it? And I don't want to sound like a... or anything. Identify as who you want to be, what you want to be, whatever. As long as you're kind to animals, I don't actually care. So
No, definitely. I don't think I always think I missed a trick because I spent 4 years as a tour manager before Instagram. Can you imagine how good my Instagram would have been?
Oh, that'd have been ace.
Traveling everywhere every week. But then I probably would have given off a much more like luxurious look at what it was about. Yeah, I was gonna ask if you've always been kind of, because you seem very comfortable on social media making videos. Have you always been that comfortable?
No. So would you believe it, when I was a kid I was quite shy. I was a little bit of a I swear to God, ask my mother, ask our Stella and she'll tell you, I was pretty shy. I connected a lot more with animals and what I could do people, which I suppose now I'm 31 and I recognise it's probably because I'm incredibly neurodivergent and sometimes I struggle with human social nuances sometimes. So that's what's drawn me to animals. But if I look back, I mean, I cringe, but everyone's got to start somewhere. So COVID hit, I just qualified and I had to shut my clinic and I had to keep my clinic shut for 5 months. I wasn't allowed to work. So I was like, right, okay. And I remember I'm very open about talking about my mental health, and at that time I was struggling with my mental health because I'd done all this and I'd shut down a successful dog walking business to do this, and then pandemic. And my friend said, you need to come to this talk, it's a free talk online, she's going to tell you how to do stuff online and do online things with your business. I was like, got out of bed, went to it, and it completely changed everything. Really? So she was a Pilates instructor, but a Pilates instructor in what's the life coach thing, NP something, it's like a certain life coach type of thing. And she was like, people will pay for your knowledge, people. And I was like, no they won't. And I did my first webinar and I think it was £10 a ticket, and it was, oh god, what was it called, It's All in the Hands or something like that. And it was just me in the conservatory shaking in front of my laptop going through the most driest presentation I've ever done in my life. Like, if you look at that and look at what I do now, you're like, is that the same person? But that's where it started, and you've got to start somewhere. And it sold out, and I was like, I can't believe people have spent £10 a ticket to come and listen to me talk about this. And then it just kind of snowballed from there, and then my confidence grew with it. And then I realized that my social media wasn't actually a reflection of who I was as a person, which is I can be very, very serious, but I can also be very, very silly at the same time. Yeah. And I need to inject that personality into my branding.
Yeah,
and that's where I've got to now. I literally, you'll have seen on my social media now, I stick the camera on before clinic starts and I start doing my skincare regime. I'm like, oh, this is what I've been up to. Like, it's very blasé because I don't care. And I'm just like chatting with old friends. Whereas when I did my first live, I used to be like really stiff and but it takes time. It takes time. And I find a lot of therapists struggle with that aspect, the thought of going live. Like, their technical knowledge is absolutely spectacular. However, the way they market themselves is so dry, for want of a better word.
I think it's quite liberating, like you said, to not care.
It is. I don't know if it's because I hit 30 or late 20s. I was like, let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go. You know, like,
yeah.
And people join me on these lives and tell me how they're doing, and all I'm doing is the most mundane task before I start clinic. I think we have to remind ourselves that our jobs, especially in this industry, they are very niche. And where I'm sat now, years ago, I could only dream of being sat here talking about dogs. Like, what? Make that make sense? But everyone's going to start somewhere. And if you're not comfortable in front of a camera, try it a few times. If it's still not coming naturally, if you're uncomfortable, the viewer's uncomfortable as well.
Yeah.
So it's a very fine balance, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think neurodivergence helps because if you're good at having a conversation with yourself, you'll be all right.
Literally, I can sit and Yorkshire Peach Therapy is just me. There's no one else kind of in the party as of yet because I'm just quite happy.
Yeah.
Doing everything myself because I know I can be difficult to work with because I'm going hopping through this way and the other, but that's what makes me unique and what makes my business unique, you know. And you've got to embrace all aspects of your personal qualities, haven't you?
Yeah, 100%. What is your thought about marketers? Do you hate marketers? Do you love them?
So for a long time, I was like, I will just make content and the people will come. And it doesn't work like that. So I have recently aligned with a woman who does marketing, and she's very, you'd get on really well with her, actually. She'll probably jump on this podcast if you ask her to as well. She's awesome. She's Yorkshire like me, says it how it is. And she was like, right, okay, so I've gone through your website, you need to do X, Y, and Z. And it's really difficult because my business is my baby. And I'm like, who are you to come tell me how I should be running things? And I was like, just go with it. And she was right. Everything she said, I knew I needed to do, but I needed someone to tell me to do it. And then I'm held accountable to them. And then I look at some, like, you know, on Instagram, and the marketers come up and it's like, have you got a strategy for making your first six-figure month? And I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. It's when they make it too fancy, I just disengage immediately. Yeah. And when they go, you know, when they're on holiday and they're like doing these candid, not candid videos of like, would you like to be earning money whilst you're in Ibiza? And I'm like, I don't want to go to Ibiza. Like, I did that. You're not resonating with me. I have to resonate with the person. And sometimes I find people in marketing are a little bit, what's the word? I'm doing this with my face. I'm like, a bit.
Well, from the audio podcast, people won't be able to see what we're doing. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I know what you mean about those videos. It's not just marketers there. It's like, do you want to do financial trading while you're by the pool? Look at me. My name's Kieran.
I used to work in construction. Now I've got 6 Lamborghinis and 5 white boxes. I don't know.
Just hold on one sec. Yeah, I'll have another pina colada. Anyway.
Like that make me want to projectile vomit. Like, well,
To look at the theory behind that, it's about that. That's meant to be a portrayal of something that you're meant to try and aspire to, aren't you? But if you don't aspire to that,
that's crazy. Well,
I'm sure that some people do, but yeah, not me.
All I want is for my dogs to be happy and healthy, and for, you know, my family to be happy and healthy, and just live a comfortable life. I don't want to have a huge... I mean, if I won the lottery, and I'm not going to say, I'm humble, I'm not going to buy a villa. Of course I'd buy a villa, but I'm not going to... There's other ways that I want to invest my time, like into my education, which is never going to get me my villa, but... it's a weird one, isn't it? But I remember when you said you were starting, you know, doing this marketing thing, I was like, this is amazing. This is going to resonate with people because I resonate with you. You're approachable, and the way that you explain things is in a very digestible format for someone like me who's like, you can tell me nothing. I've been doing this for 7 years. I've been muddling through it for 7 years as a self-employed woman. I still don't really know what I'm doing, but it's working and I want to grow it. You know,
actually, so that brings me to a point actually that I had.
Yeah, go on.
So bear with me. So like a huge part of why I wanted to speak to him.
It was at this moment that he knew.
Okay, just to explain what happened here. While recording, I had above me two shelves, and one shelf was full of drumsticks because I used to have a drumstick company way back. And so they're all my spare drumsticks. And I don't know why, but they fell down onto me whilst recording. And, you know, as you can imagine, we lost it here a little bit. So I'm just going to kind of gloss over this bit and we'll get back to the recording. And sorry for the swearing and all that kind of stuff, but I hopefully have beeped it all out.
Well, it's not live, so there you go.
I don't know if it was live.
I will make a video of that. And, you know, water's still all right, so there you go.
You're onto a good one.
Holy shit. Okay. I've got a shelf up here, but I thought, I don't know why they've just fallen off. A huge part of why I wanted to speak to you is because, you know, in the early stages of setting up the podcast, I think I was, you know, unsure about it. I had all those questions in the back of my head, things that we've spoken about, like, am I going to affect my authenticity? Am I going to affect my credibility? You know, is this going to be a good thing all in all? How do I balance this with, you know, my actual work? But I'd finished my MBA and I really wanted to do something with that. I had research, I had stuff that I wanted to publish. And so it's fair to say I had a little bit of a wobble. I'd showed a few people early kind of clips of the podcast, and I was kind of met with like a, are you sure you want to do that? But that's probably because the people I was talking to weren't the target audience at all.
Yeah.
And also were kind of like, there was definitely no benefit to them. So they were kind of like, are you sure that's what you want? So I guess for me, I studied my MA 10 years ago, my MA in marketing management over 10 years ago now, actually. And I always wanted to do something with that, but that was, you know, create a career in marketing, which is what I've done. But now I'm here. I still want to do that other side of it, which is to contribute as well, you know, however that looks. And I thought that was probably going to be academic articles. I did loads of academic articles and they were fine. It's all good, but they're quite devoid of personality, aren't they? In doing academic. So, we were chatting on WhatsApp. I think we were talking about Croft or something. And I think I said that, what do you think? I sent you the article and you are hands down the most supportive person that I have shared with. So, I really appreciate that.
No, I think that it's always difficult when you're stepping out into... The only way you're going to grow is putting yourself in situations that make you feel uncomfortable, because especially when you're making a podcast or you're creating a brand that is just you, it's not paleo, it's just you.
Yeah.
It's very nerve-wracking because you're like, oh, what if people don't like it? What if, do you know what? There's going to be people that don't like it, but there's also going to be people that absolutely love it. You know, this podcast will be a Marmite thing. So people either love it, people either hate it. And once you kind of get your head around that, job's good and just crack on with it. It's, don't overthink it. You're naturally very, very funny. You're, but also, no, you are though. Like, and the knowledge you have around marketing, you make me, that when I listened to that first podcast, I think I said it to you, I was like, you make me want to listen a bit more about marketing. Just a little bit more, because I'm very stubborn and I'd rather be petting dogs or doing whatever. But I want to listen to what you have to say because I align with you, you know?
You can pet dogs and listen to podcasts.
I can pet dogs and listen to podcasts. I could do that.
Well, I mean, I think the way that I sometimes see it, I wrote something down which I thought you might like. I said, what advice could you give to me or anyone else that is stood on the cliff of uncertainty, staring down at the chasm of despair, wondering whether to take that leap?
What, you want me to answer that? What would I say?
I don't know,
Scared.
Want me to repeat that?
Repeat it again, because I've got a phrase in my head where it sounds really cheesy, so you repeat it and then I'll...
I said, well, the bit before is, I don't think I'm the only person who struggles to take that leap of faith. What advice would you give to me or anyone else that stood on the cliff of uncertainty, looking down at the chasm of despair, wondering when to take that leap or how to take that leap?
If you don't take that leap, you'll regret it for the rest of your life. It's literally as simple as that. As someone who has come, I always feel like in where I am now in my stage of my career, I feel like I'm 10 years behind where I should be, because it took me a long time to get to here. I've always wanted to work with animals, but then my mum said there's no money in animals. She is correct, but I'll never tell her that. So I went and did my theatre, and for a long time I kind of resented that I'd done my degree in that, and you know, what job prospects did it give me? Not many, because I didn't have a trust fund, or do you know what I mean, which is very kind of telling of the arts. Like, unless you've got a trust fund, you're really not going to make it. But actually, everything I did in those 4 years, I got a first, and I worked really, really hard for that. And it still serves me now. It means that I know how to write academically. I can put a camera in front of my face, bing, I'll perform. I know how to do that. So it has paid off. It has been. And do you know what? I'm a big believer that the universe puts you exactly where you need to be at exactly the right time. But if you don't take that leap, you're never going to know. And someone else will just do it if you don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And they probably won't be as good.
Exactly. There's only one version of you. And there's only one version of you that's really, really into marketing. So just, you've got to throw yourself in stuff that you authentically believe in every fibre of your being needs to be heard, you know? We're only here for a short period of time, and we have to, I think everyone has to leave a little legacy, has to, you know, add a bit of positive change into this world, whether that's inspiring people to be more interested in marketing or whether it's inspiring people to be interested about canine pain. You've got to make a difference. Otherwise, what's it all for? You know.
Yeah, and I kind of think that that's quite motivating to do it. But not only that, to do it really well, because the other thing I'm very aware of is, okay, once this is out, I don't want to edit it. I want this out forever. You know.
Yeah.
Speaking to a few other people about, you know, once you get episodes out of a podcast, they're there forever, and that, you know, they'll keep getting listened to, hopefully. So you kind of set the bar high, and take your time to get it right. If you know, if it's that form, I guess it's different if it's kind of a social media post, I think. But if we're talking about an episode of a podcast, so yeah, I'm definitely kind of that mindset that I'm very motivated to get it out, but also to get it out right.
If you're like me, an insufferable perfectionist, which is what I am, and I'll go, ooh, and I know that when I put, it's like my book, for example, like I look at it now and I'm like, okay, right. I mean, I could have done that differently. I might stop looking at it. People love it. Just shut up and just accept it for what it is. If you want to do a second edition in however many years, then go for it. But put it out. You spend far too much time making it perfect. And especially when I'm talking about canine pain or pain management or supplements or whatever I'm talking about, because it's science-backed stuff. As soon as it's published, it's out of date.
Yeah.
Because science is always moving. If I look at my understanding of things 4 years ago, they're pretty different to what they are now. Like, I used to be completely against dogs having any kind of complex carbohydrates. I was like, it needs to just be meat, bone and offal. And it's not that simple.
Yeah.
I used to think every dog should be on raw. I've got a group of dogs that can't be on raw. So they have to be on fresh cooked food. And it's, you have to be flexible with those, but everyone's got to start somewhere. You've got to start somewhere, and making yourself that little bit uncomfortable allows for personal growth.
Yeah. Well, you say about things being, since they're published, they're out of date. You know, there is kind of, what I found when I was studying the MBA, which was different to, say, BA level, is that with my references, they just wouldn't accept the fact that I was using too many older references.
Right, so, okay.
Because, you know, the whole point of that was to progress the understanding of the topic and there's a word for it, progress the frontiers of knowledge.
Frontiers of knowledge, well, I like
progress
that.
The frontiers of knowledge. So, you know, if you're talking about referencing stuff from the 1980s or whatever, you're not seeing as being as progressing that. But what my perspective was I was taking things from the 1980s that hadn't been applied to the topic that I was talking about and applying them. And then when you're talking about other things, say like in the 50s, when in marketing, things changed from being just about the specification of a product into like the emotional aspects. So how does it make you feel to wear your glasses, you know, rather than this is the lens, this is the thing that's more durable or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Then, well, what better text than the ones at the time?
Yeah. I refer to older research papers. The reason being, it's usually I'll read stuff that I don't agree with and I'll read stuff that's outdated because I don't know if this is just me, but I need to understand what came before to get to the conclusion that we're, or the point we're at now with understanding. Yeah. And I think it's really important we read things that are outdated and read things that maybe don't align with us, because all that's going to do is make your side of the argument or debate or whatever you want to call it more robust.
Definitely. Yeah. And like understanding. So to give you an example, applying Freudian aspects of the understanding of psychology to marketing. So he developed the understanding of kind of above and below the level of consciousness when they're thinking about them. So if you're thinking about somebody buying dog food, there's aspects that change their kind of drivers, let's say, or goals, which are above the level of consciousness and below the level of consciousness. And what I was applying is then Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of need to then understand, well, if they bought their dog for a certain level of hierarchy, that's going to change the way that people then buy things for their dog. Because if you say bought your dog for security, then you would feed it in one way. If you bought your dog because it's part of your family, you'd feed it another way. And if you bought your dog because you wanted to be part of a select culture or you know, part of a culture or something, so let's say status dogs,
yes,
then you would also then feed your dog differently. Take status dogs. If you had then, if you, you know, you had a status dog and you then wanted to feed it, you'd probably feed it something that you would make an Instagram video about.
Yes.
Whether if that's raw, that's raw, but you know, it might be something else. Because
that's so interesting, because I went to I was at a conference, the APBC conference, and one of the lectures was about narcissism in pet ownership. Oh my days, I was shook to my core. So interesting. So I'll send you my notes about it. It was really interesting lecture. I'll get the lecturer's notes as well, because she specializes in narcissism and the relationship with the type of pets that people buy. So I think it was called Pugs, Parrots and Pythons, Narcissism and Trends in Pet Ownership. Absolutely fascinating. Posed some really interesting questions. And like, when I think about the psychology of people that come to me, it's I wouldn't say I have status dogs. I have. I'm looking like at the list of dogs that I've got. Well, and it's all pet parents who really just want their dogs to be well.
Yeah.
And that's the audience that I've attracted. So that's another reason why I don't deal with any sporting dogs. This, you know, I'm not saying that people who have sporting dogs or protection dogs or anything like that are narcissists. That's not it at all. But I'm not the person for you because I'm not competitive in nature. So I would struggle to align with that, I think.
Yeah.
Whereas people who just want to improve the welfare of their animals, those are my people. That's my tribe. It's about finding your tribe. But no, that's so interesting about the psychology of it. I could really talk about that a lot.
Well, there's kind of like a side to it, which is if you consider the fact that, you know, social media has been so prevalent for the last 10, 15 years, that there are things that you do that nobody would have known about until social media came about. Yeah. You wouldn't have gone and, you know, blurted out to everybody, you know, I feed my dog raw dog food to everybody like 15 years ago. But yet on social media, that is something that you would do.
Yes.
And so there's you might know this term or you might not because it is a marketing term, but Veblen goods. Conspicuous consumption. So conspicuous consumption is about you buy things because of what it then projects to other people. Fashion.
Yeah.
Is easily that. But it's more fashion in terms of aspirational fashion rather than just subculture-based fashion, you know. I like metal music, so that makes me dress in a particular way sometimes.
Yeah.
Or when I analyse how I dressed in the past, less now. Now I'm a little bit more free-spirited, let's say. But, you know, back then I think I can analyse that now and say I bought, you know, hoodies of the bands I liked because I wanted people to know I like those bands.
Yes.
You know, at the time,
especially with music, I talk a lot about emotions and feelings and dogs, but I absolutely love like metal, rock, thrash, what screaming music, whatever you want to call it. Absolutely love really loud and aggressive music, and people are like, what, but you do Reiki? And it's like, I'm allowed to have different aspects to my personality that maybe other people don't see. But no, that wearing the t-shirts with the band names on, I love that. I love like one of my most favorite t-shirts. Have you ever heard of a band called Pussy Riot?
Yeah, the Russian band.
Russian, really political. And I was like, I'm getting one of those T-shirts and I'm going to wear it because I want people to know that I stand against misogyny and, you know, bring down the patriarchy and all things like that. But I have to be very careful where I wear that. So I can't wear that, you know, at Crufts.
But I think, like I said, there's a difference there between kind of showing that as an identification of being part of a subculture or identification to a statement or something. And the other side is like wearing loads of gold chains because if you wear loads of gold chains, there's two things that could be attributed to.
Yeah.
You could attribute that to the fact that you want to show that you have some sort of wealth, which is then it is a Veblen good. It is something about showing that you have, you know, it's a status type thing. But the other side of things is that associates with hip hop music. So, like, then you have to kind of try and break down as to what that is. I think if you want to go back to feeding your dog a raw dog food diet, then, you know, people will be motivated to that. Like, so then you go back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs and you go, well, you can try and then analyze whether people are motivated to feed their dog raw because of a status thing, making it a Veblen good so they can make a lovely Instagram post about they're feeding the most expensive type of food. Or whatever, or that they're trying to show that they're investing so much in their dog and they must love their dog more than everybody else because they're doing that, or whether they're actually doing it because they believe in that and they might post that on social media for an educational aspect. So it's kind of like breaking it all down, not just trying to blanket apply, oh, they feed raw dog food, therefore they must be this. If that makes sense.
No, it does. It does make sense, and I think I feel like I can always tell when an item's been gifted or not before I look, it depends on how much effort is, and I use quotation marks there, effort has been put into the production of said video. Like on my personal Instagram, which is Pepper Loves Dogs, and I used to just talk about raw food all the time, and now it's just a little bit more like I talk about all my animals actually. And I did a lot of videos of different raw food brands to show people what the packaging was like, the consistency of it, how, you know, did the dogs eat it? Yeah. Of course the dogs ate it, you know. But it was to try and just broaden people's horizons who've maybe gone a bit brand blind and only shop with like 1, 2, 3 different raw companies. Like, open your horizons. My freezer has probably got about 20 different brands in it.
Yeah.
Just because, you know, it's variety, and that's just how I choose to feed my dogs. But people who choose to stick to just one brand, that's also okay. People who choose to just add a bit of raw on to their dry food, that's also okay. You know, it's very difficult, isn't it? Because people, you know, anyone's an expert now on social media.
Yeah, yeah. So here's a question then.
Oh, go on.
Yeah. How do you feel about kind of sponsorship and advertising on content?
I think that sometimes that companies, understandably so, can be drawn to accounts with, I call them vanity numbers, big accounts. But if you look at these big accounts and you look at the likes that they're getting, it doesn't really align with the amount of followers that they have. So it's like, have they grown that organically? So Yorkshire Future Therapies, I think I'm just over 3,000 or something like that, all organically grown, and I have a very active community. So I'm very careful about what I post with regards to brands on my page, because I feel a sense of responsibility to my followers.
Yeah.
When you're doing, oh, what do you call it, brand ambassadors and collabs, and I'm just like, because are they talking about that product because they genuinely think this is an amazing product?
Yeah.
Or
would they buy it?
Would they buy it? And for the most part, I'd be like, well, I'm not so convinced. Whereas the account that's got 300 followers and posts their paleo that they feed every single day, I'd be more interested in supporting them as opposed to the big numbers. I don't know, maybe that's just me, but I talk about what I like. I do get products gifted to me. I always, usually I've spoken about them before.
Yeah.
And the company goes, oh, actually, we'll bung yours. I never ask for anything because I don't, you know, if they want to give me some, it is, but I don't talk about products that I don't like. I just talk about the ones that I do like.
Yeah, no, definitely.
You know?
I mean, I think we get from my Paleo Ridge and previous kind of positions in terms of like a product manufacturer.
Yeah.
You get so many requests of people. Can you send us this product? We'll review it. Or can you send us the product? We want
people. I call it when product, people are on the beg.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. And sometimes we've had that with followers with hundreds of thousands of followers. Sorry, accounts with hundreds of thousands of followers or millions of followers, and we've even tried things with accounts of millions of followers and stuff like that, and I tell you, more often than not, no, because and I think it comes down to, you have to look at the account and see what kind of content they're posting. So if you get an account where, you know, it's a well-known person and they have a dog, then the dog might take up 1 out of 10 posts.
Yeah.
And it gets a lot of likes, but no one gives a shit about what they're feeding.
No, of course they don't.
And nobody cares what, you know, nobody cares anything else. That's it. And the people that are liking it might probably don't own a dog.
No, they just go, oh, cute dog.
So, yeah, that's a trap you can fall into. And then when it's a dog account, again, it depends the kind of following. I can think of accounts off the top of my head that have, you know, over a million followers that we've spoken to in the past. And, you know, they want a lot of money to post about stuff, and there's no, and they don't even really want to use the product. So But the problem is, people do it. People pay.
People do it, and I always find as well that sometimes it's small businesses that'll give product away to these big accounts because they think, oh my days, my brand is going to be in front of this many eyes, and it's like, has it been organically grown? Probably not. Those followers have probably been bought, especially now with people buying blue ticks. I'm like, what on earth is going on? Like,
oh, that's just so ridiculous.
Isn't it? But some people think, oh, this is going to give my business credibility. When for me, I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. Thank you.
Credibility or reach, I think, is the thing. Like, you know, oh, they've got a million, they've got an audience of a million. We're going to reach a million people. But, you know, it comes down to another part, which I don't know if you know about, segmentation, targeting and positioning of your brand.
Right.
Choosing your segment, the people that you're trying to reach, so who's your customer, you know, targeting them in terms of, you know, finding out what kind of accounts they're going to be looking at, and then positioning yourself to be attractive to that, to those people. You know, I can tell you that most of the time, positioning wise, you won't know what kind of people follow that account. Unless you can kind of think, oh, they're definitely going to be following it. So, you know, again, to go back to raw dog food, it's an account that promotes great ways to feed raw dog food or different kind of recipes for raw dog food. That's an extremely relevant account for us.
Yes. But
I bet that the following will be less than 1,000.
Yeah, 100%.
So it's very good for targeting. But,
It depends how you want to, or who you want to expose your brand name to. Like, I remember once Steph had got some new product in, and it was dehydrated green lip mussels. She went, I've got this product in, you're going to go absolutely knit for it. So I went over to the store and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I'm always talking about green lip mussels. So I did a post on my socials, and it was just me in my kitchen. I was like, guys, I've got this. This is, you know, I'm really looking forward to this. I bought it. I had a staff discount, but I bought it with money, you know. And I was like, oh, I'm really loving this. Blah, blah, blah. And she sent me a message the next day, and she was like, have you mentioned anything about these green lip mussels? And I went, oh, I did a little thing on my socials. And she was like, they've sold out. And I was like, oh, sorry.
Oh, wow. There you go. Yeah.
Was on my Pepper account, which again it's not a massive account, but the people that follow it want to know about new products, and they want to know about raw. And this isn't me trying to plug, like, oh, make sure you send me some freebies, because it's fucking not, you know, like, my freezer's full. It's like I talk about,
send me money instead.
send me money and I'll talk about your products. But it's like, I've had companies approach me, want to send me things, I've gone, no thank you, because I don't align with them. However, people who do social media is like a bit of a side hustle, and never gonna, I don't feel, authentically represent a brand.
Yeah, 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 exactly. I think there's always going to be kind of outliers that buck that trend.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, someone will be able to find an example of one that does. But yeah, I think there's in general, I'm kind of skeptical about some of these kind of approaches. I think it's kind of, it can be labeled as lazy marketing maybe as well. So
I think you're right. I agree with you. That's why I don't have any brand ambassadors. I don't even know how it would work if I had it, because it's a service that I have as opposed to a product.
It could do, I think. So to put it the other way, for a product, you can, you know, lots of people buy a product, they can review it, you get a star system, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, for the most part, you can have such a high volume that you can say, look, we've got 1,000 people saying that they rate this product 5 out of 5. So that's great. That kind of adds that authenticity to the product. When it comes to a service, you know, the turnover is much less. So the focus is kind of more on qualitative testimonials, which you could call thought leadership as well. So it's then case studies and stuff like that. The problem is like, would the people want to be a case study, or you know, because it's an emotive subject?
Most of my customers would be more than happy for me to talk about their progress. I'm just looking at a dog, she's called Malu, and her mum, like, she went to this referral center that I sent to, and absolutely amazing. Like gait analysis treadmill, absolutely phenomenal. She was like, oh, I've printed off the report for you. She brought me this report. I was like, oh my God, this is absolutely incredible. Like, look at all the data that we've got. And I was like, would you mind if I showed this to other customers? She was like, yeah, crack on. Yeah. Like, because people want to say, like, you know, I've been here and I've had a really good experience. I want to tell other people about it. And then that, again, encourages me to, again, I don't get a kickback for sending people to this referral center. They're just really, really good.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, maybe then having, because then it would be about who's your target audience that you want to then find. Is it to get more referrals? So then you're targeting the people that will refer it, or you're targeting the end customer, you know, the actual dog owners. And then so you might want to do both. So then you just have to segment your audience, like I said, about segmentation. You segment your audience. You say, okay, I'm going to target this group of potential customers, this group of potential customers. What kind of position do you want to show for them? And the position for, you know, obviously, like a dog owner is about, we're going to help solve your dog's issues.
Yeah.
Or find a way to help them in some way. So then it's more about your process for that, how you did that, and the success rate, that kind of thing. But for someone referring, it might also be about how you can help the transition of referral as well.
Yeah.
So it would be a slightly different kind of position for them. And then you've got to find out what kind of media those people are engaging with, so that you can put, like, say if you made a video for each of those, it's like then you would treat that very differently to get one video out to the general public and one that goes to those people in particular. So you might do a Facebook campaign, for instance, for people that are searching a lot for pain management for dogs.
Then do you know what it is? People don't know the dogs are in pain. I'm shifting who my videos are for and who my audience is. So it's moving away from pet parent targeted stuff, and it's moving towards behaviorists and trainers, because they have a very strong voice with the pet parent. So if I can get the trainers and the behaviorists to listen to what I'm saying about pain, that's how I then kind of get the referrals. But it's a really tricky one, because A, I don't want to put the fear of God in people and go, your dog's in pain, why can't you see it? But then part of me is like, well, the people need to know. Would you not want to know? But I have to remember that not everyone thinks like me. So that's why I'm shifting towards working with trainers and behaviorists that I align with, sort of force-free ones, because the biggest, loosely termed, trainers at the moment are men in jogging bottoms and beards that are putting on prong collars.
Hang on.
The dogs. Are you wearing grey jogging bottoms?
Not grey jogging bottoms. I'm not jogging bottoms. And I've got a beard. Oh, my God. I can't believe how offended I am.
What's the opposite of misogyny? When the woman hits the man, what's that called? There's another word for it. My husband knows it because he accuses me all the time.
I don't know.
There is a word for it. So, like, misogyny is when men are mean to women, but there is another one. But these blokes that are doing these training videos, and it's like, I'll do an impression, right? Have you got a dog that is pulling on the lead? Well, I've got all of the answers for you. If you just pay £6,000, they sound like that. Do you remember that window salesman? You buy one.
That was a northerner, though, wasn't it? You buy one, you get one free. It's more like, I'm Barry Scott, and this. Still it bang, and the dog is not pulling anymore.
It's not pulling anymore. Look at this. We've gone from reactive to not reactive in 30 seconds because I've cut off its airways with this slip lead. And it's like, for God's sakes, but do you know what? They're doing well.
They are.
Do you know what it is? It's because they've got the marketing. They don't know anything about training. They'll know like a tiny, they know just enough to sound like they know what they're talking about. Yeah. When actually they're using hideously unethical and outdated methods, but their marketing's good. And it's like, why are people drawn into this absolute crap? But they are.
Yeah, I mean, but it's coming from a position of zero knowledge, so.
Yes, which just baffles me. But it's the same. Anyone or anything in the animal industry who works in the animal industry, we have to remember it's an unregulated industry.
Yeah.
Like, I went into my little, so there's a little tiny, tiny pet food shop in Cass that I go to. They've got a couple of freezers, and I always make sure to go in and buy a little bit of raw, because if everyone's doing that, it'll encourage you to stock raw, blah, blah, blah. And I go in to pick up some food, and I'm like, what on earth is that? It's a rabbit in a plastic bag, like, that had been shot. Plastic bag at the bottom of the freezer. And I was like, who are these from? And they're like, oh, you know, some butcher came round with them. I went, all right. She was like, yeah, there are five. Do you want one? I was like, no, I'm okay, thank you. I'll just stick with my DEFRA number food. And I'm for God's sakes, like, it happens everywhere, doesn't it? It's there's a lot in this industry that need plugging, but there's no one to police it, you know?
No, because I think a lot of the certifications and stuff, you actually have to proactively want to go and get it. You need a DEFRA license to be able to, you know, so even they should have a DEFRA license if they're selling, you know, like a, you know, any animal products like that. But
it's a plastic bag. It's like a big sandwich bag with a big rabbit in it that's just been shot. And I was like, ace, this is so nice and progressive.
Mm-mm. Yeah. No, it's scary.
Shot, probably not.
scary. And that's where, you know, that's the kind of things that feed the negative rhetoric against raw dog food, I think.
100%.
But that's a different thing altogether.
We waffle on about.
Yeah. Well, no, I have taken up so much of your time, and I really, really appreciate it. Yeah, I know. So, if people wanted to, you know, find out more about you and follow your channels, you've got a lot of channels, but can you shout them out now? Like, it'll save me a lot.
Yorkshire Pooches Therapy is on Facebook, Yorkshire.pooches on Instagram, TikTok is Yorkshire.pooches, and then on LinkedIn, I'm Yaz Porritt. So if you look on Instagram, that's my platform that I'm most active on is Instagram. And then I've got my little link tree that kind of takes you over, and my website, yorkshirepooches.co.uk.
Amazing. No, thank you. Well, I really appreciate you.
Thank you for having me.
And I didn't die from the drumsticks, you know, so that's great.
The drumsticks was so funny.
I'll have to find that clip, and I'll be on social media at some point.
Can't wait.
Yeah. But, yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, darling.
Yeah.
So, like I said, Yaz is killing it on social media and engagement. Please do check out her channels. I love Yaz's perspective on finding a balance between seriousness and silliness in content creation. I think that finding the right balance can help engage and educate audiences. But like Yaz said, it's important to be mindful of projecting human emotions onto animals and to advocate for their welfare. And this whole concept is linked to the theory of the extended self. The theory of the extended self is a concept that suggests that some people, like dogs and possessions, can be considered part of one person's identity, extending it beyond their body and mind. The theory was first proposed by Russell Belk in 1988. Who argued that people can intentionally or unintentionally view their possessions as part of themselves. Belk believed that understanding this relationship between people and their possessions could help explain consumer behaviour. For example, someone might feel attached to a product they buy and become anxious to restore it if it's damaged, as if the damage were to their self. For people with dogs, this can mean that they project their own preferences onto their dog, looking at things from the dog's perspective, but with their own preferences subconsciously driving their behaviour. And then the social aspect of dog walking is a major consideration. This comes back to motivations for getting a dog, as this is very likely to influence consumer behaviour. If part of somebody's motivation to get a dog relates to the social aspect of dog walking, there'll be a high likelihood of a person wanting to regularly walk their dog. This motivation may sit above the level of consciousness as intending to be for the welfare of the dog, but it's likely to be largely subconsciously driven by the desire to fit in with the social driver, either as part of a dog walking community or fitness-related social aspects. This has come up a few times, so I might actually do a specific episode that covers this. Okay, a horrible thought, but for some people, is buying a dog like buying a Peloton bike? so it's linked to a fitness goal or something. Either way, understanding the psychology of consumers is crucial in marketing, as it helps tailor messages and products to their needs and motivations. Social media can influence dog owners' behaviour, and it's important to provide accurate and responsible information. Yaz is all over that and is challenging people in the right way on social media. Yaz was saying that authenticity and credibility are key in content creation, and content creators should embrace their unique qualities and find ways to connect with their target audience. Authenticity is key in content creation as it helps build trust and connection with the audience. And Yaz really did help me take that leap of faith as well. And taking a leap of faith can be scary, but it's necessary for personal growth and success. I don't want to have any regrets, so I just need to do it. And I have. Yaz was saying that sponsorship and advertising should be approached with caution, ensuring that products and services align with values and beliefs of the content creator, which I agree with too. And Yaz said that the pet industry needs better regulation to ensure the welfare and well-being of animals. And I do agree with this as well. But we're going to have to see what happens on that front though. Responsible marketing is essential in the pet industry, particularly when it comes to promoting dog food and other products. But again, just in closing, building a strong network and collaborating with like-minded professionals can help expand, reach, and promote positive change in the industry. So massive, massive thanks to Yaz. It was so great to get her on. I hope you enjoyed the episode, and I'm just going to leave you with the lovely theme song for this again.
Marketing made clear. We're here to educate from beginners to pros. We'll elevate, bringing the insights like a blazing spark. Together we'll conquer, leaving a mark. The silence with knowledge to impart, shattering the doubt, driving passion like a dart, breaking.